You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Thanks for tuning in to the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. This is episode number 30, and I'm your host, Parker McDonald. Today, we're talking to Jeff Jones of the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, and we're going to talk about everything that Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is a part of and what they do to protect our public lands, as well as something that we're right in the middle of right now, and that is the Natural Resources Management Act. What it is, what it entails, and why it's important to you and me. So we're here at episode number 30, and I am blown away that we are in the 30s now. So every time we do a new episode, I'm just more and more excited about where we are, the things that we've done, all the really cool guests that we've talked to, and kind of I think about the milestones that we've hit in that such a small amount of time. So first off, before we get started with this podcast, just wanted to tell you guys thank you for your support. It has been absolutely incredible. Being a part of something like this, and I've got to say, like, we are really into a lot of hunting tactics. So if you're a whitetail hunter, we talk a lot about whitetail hunting tactics, and we tell a lot of stories, and we kind of just bullcrap a lot. And so first off, thank you so much for putting up with that. Hope you guys have learned some stuff. I know I have, just in this past over a year that we've been doing this podcast. I know I've learned a ton just by talking to some of the people that we've got to talk to. Man, it's just been really cool. And this week was really no different. So as I said in the intro, we talked to Jeff Jones, who is currently serving as the state chair of Alabama the Southeast chapter chair of the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. And he's just such a cool dude. He's got lots of fun stories. Just a really neat guy. But one thing that's a little bit different about this podcast is we don't really talk about hunting tactics and strategies and stuff like that, which is completely out of the norm. We'll go back to doing that, but this is important. We're talking about the Natural Resources Management Act that just has passed through the House and the Senate, and is maybe by the time this airs will be signed by the president. And I don't want to get too far into it in the intro because we talk a lot about it in the podcast, but it's so good. There's so much good conversation that happens here. Here's the deal. Okay. So if you know me, if you've had any conversations with me, or you've listened to the podcast, basically from the time we started, like, I really value production quality of podcasts, and so we started on a high note. And I'm gonna dog Apple for just a second. The new MacBooks just completely suck, and I've got a brand new MacBook. It was like a $3,800 MacBook or something like that. It was stupid expensive, and it struggles for whatever reason when I'm recording a long recording. So it gets to about 45 minutes, and then it starts just doing weird stuff. And I've doctored it a little bit in the past and tried to fix it. Basically, what I'm saying is there are some issues that have happened towards the end of this podcast. Actually, in the beginning of it, I took all of our podcasting equipment, so a soundboard, three microphones, all kinds of junk that really should work. I mean, I paid way too much money for it in the first place, plus having a nice computer. And for whatever reason, the microphones stopped picking up pretty much as soon as we started recording. So it completely bypassed those, and I thought it might because, not to get into too much detail, but the new MacBooks are only a USB-C in, and you have to use a little dongle to plug in USB stuff, and so it's just absolutely stupid. And all that stuff went out, and so the backup was using just the internal microphone of the computer, and that worked for a little while, and you'll be able to tell it's fine. It's okay recording. It's not as good as I'd like it to be, but it's It's okay. But going about 49 minutes, I think, into the podcast, it starts making this really weird kind of like clicking noise, and you'll hear it. And it's mostly past all of the really, really good conversation that we got into. But about the last 20 minutes or so of the podcast is a little bit annoying to listen to it. But hopefully you guys will enjoy it. The content of it is absolutely great. It's really good. Our conversation with Jeff Jones was incredible. And I think you guys are going to get a lot out of it. All that said, I have ordered the things I need to completely bypass recording on my computer. So pretty much from this point on, unless something crazy happens, we should be getting really good, solid recordings. Fingers crossed, okay? Fingers crossed. All right, so before we get into the rest of this podcast, I want to give a quick shout out to our partners at Onyx, at Tethered, at New Breed, and at Go Wild. So, really neat thing about Go Wild, I just got a message from a guy today, and he literally said, "Hey, I was listening to the podcast, heard you talking about Go Wild, I've heard you talking about it, I've just been procrastinating it, and I finally went ahead and downloaded the app, and holy cow, I can't believe that I procrastinated this long. This is a great community." I mean, like, it wasn't verbatim that, but it was pretty dang close. And I thought it was so cool that I was about to record today, and I got that message. I was like, well, I got to say something about that. So that was really cool. And I think you're going to be like this guy. When you go and download it and you start looking and scrolling through the content, it's just some really stinking cool stuff. So if you haven't already downloaded the app, go download Go Wild. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's just a social media app for outdoorsmen, for hunters, fishermen, cooks, if you like wild game recipes and stuff like that, which BT dubs. Wow, I just sound like a teenage girl, I'm sure. But I smoked the hog that we killed in Georgia. I did a whole hog smoking, if that's what you call it, hog roast. And I just roasted the whole thing, and holy crap, it was freaking delicious. It was so good. The only time that it did not taste good was when I took a bite out of the leftovers and I found a 22 mag bullet that I shot it with. And that was not delicious. And I learned a very valuable lesson that no matter how long, how low and slow you smoke it, lead does not ever taste good. And that is the truth. So, other than that, it was freaking amazing. So, I thought I'd just throw that in. You guys, if you've never smoked a whole hog, freaking go do it. It's the best thing ever. It was so good. I made a lot of people happy that evening. So, anyways, I posted about it on Go Wild. You can go check that out. Another thing that is coming up, I'm not going to give it away right now, but we will be doing a really cool giveaway with Tether very soon. So you guys stay on the lookout. I'm not going to announce it yet, but I'm going to get you guys excited about it because we are going to be giving away some stuff with Tethered that I think you're going to want to be a part of. So, all that being said, you guys enjoy this episode with Mr. Jeff Jones of the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. This is live and in person. We got Mr. Jeff Jones here at our office, at our Southern Ground office.
Southern Ground office, ninth floor of a unnamed building in the center of Huntsville, Alabama, overlooking beautiful downtown.
Yep, we really paid a lot for this thing, man. Like, we went all out for
it. Yeah, you guys are really moving up in the world here.
No, we're here at Jeff's office in Huntsville, and man, it's a nice place.
Thanks so much. I'm glad you guys were able to come. I'm looking forward to spending the next hour or so with you.
It's going to be a lot of fun, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. So, for you, those of you who do not know, Jeff is... first off, one of the nicest people, and I learned that, when was that? When did we have that pint night?
About a month ago.
A month ago, yeah, we had the Huntsville BHA pint night, and I got a chance to talk to Jeff. We talked back and forth on Facebook when the Southern Ground podcast first really got going, and I talked to you about having you on, and we just weren't ever able to make it happen, but here we are. And
yeah, man,
it's as good a time as any.
Yeah, so, you know, life gets in the way sometimes. I think sure. Life got in the way on that one, but I'm glad to be here. And so for those that haven't been to one of our events and probably don't know who I am, my name is Jeff Jones. I live here in Huntsville. This is my 11th year in Huntsville. Much like, you know, the moniker of our town is you got to look real hard to find somebody that is from here originally. So I am a transplant. I originally from South Mississippi. Went to New York right after graduate school at Mississippi State, and then spent about 8 years there, a couple of tours in Iraq, and then back here. Wanted to be back south, and quite frankly, landed in a great place. So over the years, when I came here, it's interesting that when I was at Mississippi State, I was there for 6 years, undergraduate and graduate school, and I was part of a really great hunting club. You know, we had 6 or 7,000 acres of great land that we leased from International Paper and some other landholders. So all told, for me as a college student in 1994, it cost me $200 a year to hunt that, full rights, year round, right?
Golly.
And we were not overcrowded, okay? Great opportunity. So when I came back south, you know, I wanted to kind of rekindle some of that, and, you know, started looking around, try to find a hunting club. Almost impossible to find something like that here, especially as a new guy. Kind of like you want to be a Mason, you know, to be one, you got to know one. Well, I was not in that club. So, you know, I kind of sat on my hands for a little bit and got to looking around, and there's some really great public land opportunities here. And as things go, I kind of got drawn into the backcountry hunters and anglers. And over the course of time, we started up a chapter in the Southeast. I was able to be one of the founding members of that chapter, and then eventually I just recently served as the chair of the Southeast chapter, and now I'm on the North American Board of Directors for the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. So it's been an interesting ride over the last 3 years.
That's really cool. That's a big deal. And so we're talking to Josh Kaywood.
Yep.
And which Josh works for BHA full-time.
Josh is a full-time Backcountry Hunters and Anglers chapter advisor. He was the first chair of the Southeast chapter. As a matter of fact, he took the job as Southeast chapter advisor about two-thirds of the way through his chairmanship, and then I took over for him.
But so the interesting thing is he was saying, so your position is volunteer.
Yes.
Completely.
Yeah.
He was saying you're a volunteer, and you're actually his boss in the way everything kind of
sort of
goes down.
Yeah, we more like we work hand in hand together.
That's pretty cool.
I probably talk to him as much as I talk to my brother.
That's cool. Yeah, he was a cool guy. Tyler got to meet him, and also Tyler is here, so just kind of sitting in the corner, just hanging out,
doing
what Tyler does. That is what. He doesn't talk much, but
on the podcast.
But apparently,
you got to fill the space.
Yeah.
But apparently, he throws a few fists from time to time.
Yeah.
is that true?
No.
We'll find out by the end of the hour. We'll see what happens with that glass.
We won't talk about Tyler's week
altercation.
His little altercation that he had this week. So yeah, that's really cool. We're excited to have you on, Jeff. Like I said, we've wanted to have you on for a little while now, but we're not able to make it happen. Jeff's trying to quietly open glass.
You know,
bottles.
I want to make sure my voice stays, Mr. you know, B. level here. You know, just have a little little liquid there.
So you work here. You're active duty right now, right?
No, I'm an Army Reserve officer.
Okay.
So as my daily life. I am a vice president at a very large architect and engineering firm, global presence. I run our facilities business, specifically looking at our federal government customers, Army Corps of Engineers, and some other agencies.
Okay.
And in my spare time, I am an Army Reserve officer. I'm an Army engineer, and I run a specialty engineering team of 8 folks here in Huntsville. My wife is also an Army Reserve officer. So, you know, we give up 2 weekends a month for the greater good. And hopefully one of us take a step down from that here pretty soon.
Yeah.
We got 2 young daughters, a 7 and 3-year-old, so things are always, you know, busy at our house.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So
I got
he's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, so basically what we're saying is you're a pretty big deal.
Not really. No. I'm just a cog in a greater machine.
That's awesome. So we were talking about it a little bit before we got started, but And you kind of gave us a little rundown about how your outdoors lifestyle has gone as of late. But how was your fall, man? Like, did you get to get out in the woods very much, or how was that?
I did. So I would classify it in three different ways. So we'll call it super big game hunting. We'll call it deer hunting. And then, you know, I am a small river and stream fisherman. That happens all year long here, except right now because it's too cold and flooding.
It's cold.
So from the super big game point, spent a week in Colorado elk hunting. Right outside of Durango, my good friend Todd Waldron, who's the chair of the yep. New York chapter, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. So he and I, this is our second year out there. Have you met Chris Jenkins?
I have not. I've seen the name.
Chris Jenkins, the Monahan brothers, yep. Myself and Todd all went out to Durango. Chris was hunting, he drew a mule deer tag there.
Oh, wow.
And we got there. This was the same week, second rifle season that he and I hunted 2 years previous in 2016. So that year it was really hot, you know, 70 degrees. We hiked way into the wilderness. It was our first Western hunt. And quite frankly, we got over our heads in a hurry. made a bunch of corrections while we were hunting, and dang near come away with, you know, a pretty nice size elk. We had a great encounter. So we decided to go right back to that spot this time. And as we were driving there, it went from, you know, low land, everything fine, to a little bit of snow, more snow, more snow, more snow. And the place where we were going to go camp and hunt was over knee deep of snow. So there's no way you could effectively do that where we were at. So we had to make a bunch of adjustments this time. We did not have the great encounter that we had last time. Jamie Monahan ended up killing a I think a 5x5
wow.
on our second move. Todd and I had to pull out a little bit early and weren't able to connect. Again, great learning experience. So we've got two trips down, and we're looking forward to trip number three. Maybe, probably not this year, but the following year in 2020. We're like at every other year.
That's cool. Yeah. I actually got to talk to, I think it was Jamie. I'm pretty sure it was Jamie at the Birmingham
mm-hmm.
Pint Night the day after the Huntsville one. So
was he the redheaded guy?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some hair.
So Jamie.
He was lacking a little bit of hair. Okay. Not too bad.
Yeah. But.
Jamie's our Alabama state chair for BHA, and then his brother Andrew was on the Southeast board with us, and one of the founding members of the board.
Okay.
So it was great to be able to go out in the woods with those guys. They've also got a farm, not far from here in Gurley. That
okay.
I was.
Yeah, Jamie. I was talking to him. About,
that's right.
Yeah.
I was fortunate to hunt with them last year, and remember that week when it was like single digits, really really horrible. So I went that weekend to hunt with them, and actually had a shot, but I was shaking so bad by the time the deer come out that I could not hold it still enough to get the beads on that.
We don't know anything about that.
That big old floppy doe.
Not getting tore up.
Yeah.
No.
About some deer.
Not getting tore up.
So from a deer standpoint, this was the worst season I've had in the last 5 years. I did not kill a white-tailed deer. I'm kind of upset, but you know what? I was not able to get out enough this year that I have been in previous years, and things just didn't line up. So, you know, it happens.
It does.
We'll pick it up next year. I caught a lot of fish this fall. I mean, a lot. The rivers, I fish the Flint River almost exclusively. I put a lot of catfish in the freezer this year, put a lot of crappie in the freezer this year. So we'll be doing fine over, you know, we're about to start Lent, and I feel like I'm in a good spot for that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, didn't get to hunt nearly as much as maybe you wanted to,
yeah.
But man, I mean, like, you know, you were saying that two weekends out of the month, you're doing
Army stuff,
which is, you know, I mean, that's, and we appreciate that.
Hey, listen, it's an honor to serve. You know, it's not a burden. You know, it sounds like that sometimes when you do the things you want to do, but there are clear benefits all the way around.
Absolutely. So kind of going back to that, like, I don't feel super bad for you that you didn't get to hunt, because apparently whenever you go out in the woods, your luck is pretty good, or when you put into a draw system. So
yeah.
Talk a little bit about we've talked about it before, but your Kentucky elk experience, right?
Yeah, so I am one of the lucky few folks that have killed successfully harvested a elk in the state of Kentucky. This was really the bug that got me into elk hunting, because I was not really that into it before then. So it was 2013 early 2014. I think the drawing closes right at the end of April, early May. I was on the range at Fort Knox and saw plenty of big deer out there, decided I need to find out, you know, Fort Knox isn't that far from Huntsville. I need to find out how to go hunt this place. So as I was looking at their outdoor rec page, I saw a link, hunt Kentucky elk. So I clicked on that link, went to the Kentucky Game and Fish page, you know, two $10 tags I was in, you know, I put in for a rifle bull and a rifle cow. A week later, got an email. It's like, hey, results are in, go check your thing. Sure enough, first time out of the shoot, having never heard of this before, I drew an elk tag at Kentucky and successfully harvested a cow, I think that December of 2014.
That's cool, man.
It is.
That's
it
really neat. Is. I think you're probably the only person I've ever talked to. Well, no, Jamie drew
a tag.
But he didn't get to go.
He did not hunt.
Which is crazy.
It is.
That is.
There's plenty of things to eat tag soup on, and that ain't one of them.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one that you want to go on.
But listen, they'll take my money for the rest of my life. You know,
what did the total trip cost from?
So I added this whole thing up, and I want to tell you, prices have changed dramatically since the time I did this. So with the tag, I used points for Hampton Inn in Hazard, Kentucky, so I stayed for that, basically nothing. I bought very little gear because I wasn't, you know, camping out. And I had a startup outfitter that was a bunch of state troopers that were getting their business going. And so for $500, they guided me for a week. So I walked out of there with like $1,200 total.
So you were staying in the hotel going to kill elk?
Yep. Yep.
Can't beat that.
And listen, what I thought, you know, I said, hey, look, I want to hunt hard. And we did. We hunted hard. We walked hills. We walked hollers. And I killed that cow way up in the bottom of a holler in backwoods Kentucky. And quite frankly, had I not shot her, she would have run right over me.
So they guided you on public?
Or? Both, public and private. So the way we started, kind of the way Kentucky is, not unlike the South. You know, there's not just huge blocks of, well, outside of the Daniel Boone National Forest where I was hunting around Hazard, there was an open permit mine. So big mine. It was open to the public to go hunt during elk season. During the application process, when I drew that because it had the highest success rate, the mine changed hands and they took it out of the public domain. So there's a, I think there's a wildlife management area that backs up to that land. I actually killed the cow on the border of those two pieces of property.
Okay.
But those guys still had access to that mine that got pulled out that I no longer had access to. So effectively what I did was buy access to the mine.
That's really neat, man.
Yeah.
That sounds like it was a pretty cool time. Did you feel like the luckiest man on earth?
Oh, yeah. I felt great, man. I'll tell you this. We hunted hard for a week, right? And it was, those things were few and far between the week I was there. And I was, you know, you'd see them right at the crack of dawn and then they were gone. But that was the year, you know, in 2014, there was the huge mast crop that year. So, I mean, like you could put a piece of plywood in the woods and you could surf all the way down it from all the acorns, right?
Yeah.
So all the elk were way up high on these hills. So on the, you have the mine and they mine the top. They do not mine the hollers, right? That goes down to protect the watersheds down below. But so the, where I killed mine, there was an unmined hilltop and that thing was steep and high. And so you could see them all sitting up there on the ledge. So, I mean, it's either you go to them or try to get them come to you. And that's what we did is we got down in the bottom of that holler and had them come to us. I will tell you, though, one of the things I remember is I shoot this cow, and she was an old one. So, you know, I got a 500-pound animal laying on the ground in the bottom of this holler. And I look up, and there's probably a 300-foot climb to get out of there. And here's what I thought. Well, I know they were coming with a truck to get me, so that was good. But if I was in Colorado and this happened, and this was a bull, there would be another 100 or 200 pounds associated with this, and I would have to carry it out on my back. Is that something that I'm ready to do right now? And the answer was no.
So it kind of got you.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of brought everything to reality for you.
Absolutely.
Guy wanting to go hunt out west for elk, you know.
Yes.
Now, are the elk bigger in Colorado or out west?
They're bigger in Kentucky.
They're bigger in Kentucky.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the climate's a little more helpful to them. They have more grass, you know. They can grow a little bit bigger.
Right. I'm jealous, man. That sounds like a cool.
Listen, if you're not applying for it, I think you can apply for all four tags now. When I did it, it was only two. So four tags, it's like 80. I don't know if it's still 10 bucks a piece or 20, but you know, no more than 80 bucks to apply for four tags there. You should be doing that every year.
Oh, yeah. That's really neat. I'm It's a cool story to just like, you know, the way you applied and how quickly you got it back. It was kind of just a nonchalant thing. It's kind of like somebody who goes to the casino, just like, I don't really gamble, but I got a few quarters.
Put a dollar in the slot machine and win $10,000. I'll tell you how improbable it was. You know, they drew 1,000 tags that year. 10% allocated to out-of-staters, so 100 tags to folks like me. And there were 50,000 applicants for those 100 tags. And I drew one on the first time out.
Golly.
If you don't care, I'm going to Georgia and get some lottery tickets. You pick the numbers.
We'll take a ride over to Georgia real quick.
I'll tell you, I have not been successful at that yet, so you may not want to pull that.
I'll take my chances.
That's cool. So the real reason that we're here, most of the time our show, and our listeners are going to know this, that our podcast, we talk a lot about deer hunting. We talk a lot about stories and tactics and strategies and stuff like that. The thing that we've probably been lacking a lot in is kind of the behind-the-scenes stuff, like things that are giving us access to go and enjoy these things. And I don't want to get us pigeonholed into a show that only talks about the fun stuff without talking to some of the people who are really on the front lines, taking care of us and making sure that we can still enjoy these. And also, you being military, like, you kind of get to do it in the outdoor front and just on the American front, which is pretty neat. But we've talked a little bit about BHA, and you've mentioned it, kind of your position on that, but just kind of in a nutshell, I know we're going to have some listeners who maybe aren't familiar with it. What would you say if you were talking to somebody who'd never heard of it before, how would you describe what Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is all about?
I always answer this question with a paraphrased quote from Stephen Rinella. You know, Stephen Rinella is probably the greatest voice for hunters and anglers in America right now. He's articulate, he's well-spoken, and he can get a message across to a wide audience. And he has described Backcountry Hunters and Anglers this way: that is a collection of the most hunting and fishingest folks that I have ever been around. And that is 100% truth. So I've been lucky enough. I went to the National Rendezvous in 2016. I did it again last year in 2018. I'll be there this year in 2019. And I will tell you that you're going to meet people from all walks of life. We are not a politically affiliated organization. Matter of fact, we did some research on what we look like. We look just like America, split right down the middle, right? There's folks on either side of the aisle. We're united by that one common bond, which is that love of the outdoors and protecting our access and our ability to go experience, you know, that solitude or that challenge of the hunt that we're going to see. So Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, we are the sportsman's voice for our wild public lands and waters. And really, you know, we're an advocacy organization right now. We're not like the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation that can go buy, you know, 1,000 acres and set it aside in a permanent easement. But we are the fastest growing conservation organization in the country right now. So, you know, in 2016, we were trying to get to 10,000 members. And then in 2018, we were at 30,000 members. And in 2019, we're looking to 50,000 members. So, you know, we're almost doubling, or we're on that exponential growth curve going up and up and up. And you can see, if you just were to look at, you know, our organizational magazine, the Backcountry Journal, if you looked at the growth over the last 4 years, that alone should tell you a lot about how our organization has come in the last few years.
That's cool, man. And that's, you know, for me, I haven't been into the public land, the whole scene, I guess you could call it, for the majority of my life. I've been, you know, I was raised in Texas where there's just not a whole lot of public land. And so getting on leases and doing things, that was kind of the norm for us, paying way too much money. And something really happened to me several years ago when I decided to start just hunting public land pretty much exclusively. Something changed, and all of a sudden it became, in the way that it would happen for a guy who buys property, right? You buy a farm or you buy a ranch in Texas or something like that. You all of a sudden now have to take care of this piece of property. You have to take care of this land. You have to maintain it and make sure the habitat is right. And so all of a sudden, you know, you see the hashtag public landowner and stuff. Like, there's an accountability that comes with that. And that was something I realized. And I didn't realize it super early on, even in the public land. I was actually turkey hunting one day And I was just obviously not seeing any turkeys because I don't see a lot of turkeys when I'm turkey hunting.
That's what I say. I'm a bad hunter. I'm a bad turkey hunter.
I'm a bad turkey hunter. Sometimes I get lucky.
I see lots of them. I just can't get them, you know, much closer.
Exactly.
Than that.
I was sitting under a tree. And I was thinking about it. I was like, man, it would be really cool if somebody would manage this property. If somebody could manage this land for turkeys. I'm thinking, yeah, me. Mm-hmm. Like, that's me. That's my job. It's my job to be a part of that. And so what I actually did is, like I normally do as I'm turkey hunting, I'm sitting on my phone and just kind of going through stuff. And I was like, I saw something for backcountry hunters and anglers, you know, definitely before that. But I was kind of reminded of it. I was like, you know what? It's time to just go ahead and be a part. And so I joined BHA right then and there, sitting underneath a tree turkey hunting during the spring. I joined BHA, and all of a sudden, you know, there's an ownership that comes with being a part of an organization like that. And so, you know, I can say that I greatly appreciate the things that you're doing. I greatly appreciate the things that the organization as a whole is doing. And I think it's really interesting what you said about people from both sides of the aisle. We went to those pint nights, and you can definitely tell that. Even here in the dirty South, you know, you got people that are all walks of life that are coming in. You got the Bubba looking guy, you know, with a big burly beard walking in. And then you've got like doctors and lawyers and like your higher end people, you know, that are coming in. And so, and then aside from that, you've also got, you know, you got all over the political spectrum of people who are coming in and being a part of something like that. And it's just really neat. It's really neat to see, you know, you don't have to agree on everything.
That's right.
But if you can agree on some things, then you can be unified.
The thing that unites us is the love for the land, the love for the outdoors, and the ensuring that it's going to be available for our kids and then those other generations behind
us. Exactly.
You know, when you start looking at, and it's happening everywhere, reduction in license sales, reductions in hunters, our numbers are declining. And you know, I've heard people say, and this is true, that if we, I think it was Kevin Murphy saying this not too long ago, if we're not taking care of the generation to follow us, then we'll be the last two generations that are experiencing our lifestyle. And that's the absolute truth, right? Now, there are some changes happening right now. So it's, you know, back in the 70s, it was the back to the land movement, right? Here, it's the locavore movement and the hunters and anglers that are looking for a more sustainable, low to the ground source of their protein is a real thing. And there are more people coming out from the and I'm going to say air quotes here, the millennial generation, because I fight this all the time. Is like the excuse for everything is, oh, the millennials. I reject that completely, right? It's all about communication, and it's all about, you know, coming together over that common set of viewpoints. And we all have the same thing when you get down to the root cause of the issue. That's why backcountry hunters and anglers is growing so fast. And you're right. We're growing with guys that are Western ranchland farmers wearing, you know, boots and a Wrangler shirt. And we're growing with the millennial coming in from New York City in a man bun, you know, wearing an expensive set of tight pants.
Well, that's like a guy we met at South Palooza. What was his name?
Who are you talking about?
Sean from New York.
Yeah, from Connecticut.
Yeah, he just...
Yeah, just...
You would not think he would want to be a hunter, but...
Yeah, I mean, and he's probably listening to this. He actually started listening to us last week, so this guy is just a really cool guy. Actually, he's getting double mentions.
Yeah.
Right? On a podcast, man. We need to get him on the show.
Yeah, no kidding.
He came from Connecticut all the way to South Georgia to learn about saddle hunting, which is pretty dang
cool. Well, let me tell you, when I lived in New York, I lived in the southern tier of New York right outside of Westchester County, and, you know, we bordered Connecticut there. I will tell you, I've seen more and bigger deer in that county of New York, which is one county north of Manhattan, than any other place I have ever been, including that great hunting land in Mississippi.
That's right? Awesome.
Part of it is because nobody hunts.
Yeah.
They're completely undisturbed, right? It is a haven for deer.
Was it this guy flew from Connecticut to Georgia and bought everything from Walmart?
Our listeners are going to be bored by this story. This is the second time.
Well, I ain't going to say it all. I ain't going to give it all to them. But what it all comes down to, he flew from Connecticut and hunted, and now he's Well, I think he hunted before, but now he's going to be a true saddle hunter. So just the word of mouth travels so much. It is
cool, though, you know, just going back to kind of seeing what BHA is all about. And you were talking about Steven Rinella, too. And I would agree with you. He's one of the greatest voices that we've got in the community. I hear people all the time, people that I would not expect to be, you know, people I wouldn't expect to be talking to me about outdoors or deer hunting or anything like that.
Yeah.
But this guy's on Netflix. Like, you imagine, if you can imagine some of the outdoor personalities, Netflix saying, yeah, we'll put them on the network, you know, that they'll be great for it. That's not true. And I think it's because of organizations like this that you're able to start seeing people kind of go into more of the mainstream media because it's not just a one-sided. It's not a one political party.
You're right.
And, type movement.
And they're in this quality too. So I will tell you, you know, if you followed Steve Rinella, I guess this is probably 2009, 2010 time frame. He had his first show that was on the Travel Channel, and it was mm-hmm. called The Wild Within, right? And it was an hour-long format. That was the only show related to the outdoors that I could get my wife to watch. And not just watch, but be engaged in, right? Because it was all about, you know, this food-centric utilization of a whole animal on our wild, you know, public lands, right? And you had to work for it. And I'll be honest with you, that's what drove me back into the public lands piece here in North Alabama. And when I got to realize, like, you know, we're in a pretty good spot, you know, if you're a public lands hunter here. And so that, you know, some of those moments led exactly to where we sit right now.
Yeah. And it's neat to be a part of, you know, as a millennial, as what generation would you have
come I'm a from? Gen X.
A Gen X. So
look, I was the guy, we were not supposed to be worth anything and be able to do anything. And, you know, we were the ones that basically invented that. It was the first internet browser, and, you know, lots of the companies that
I
are worth
that
a
was us.
Now,
it won't
yeah.
be nothing.
Yeah, well,
they say
everybody's
year,
not. Scared
everybody's going to be worse than okay. the one before. Right?
But seeing, I mean, it's really being a millennial and getting to see, like, you know, I think we're part of a generation that was before a lot of the changes, the big changes. Mm. And after, so we're seeing a lot of it, and obviously the Gen Xers are too. But seeing an organization that really feels like, you know, when I go to a pint night or something like that, it feels like it's being
built
on yes. the backs of millennials.
Absolutely,
which is really cool. That's neat. And you know, I work in church work, and you see a lot of that as well. I mean, it's being built on that generation.
We said this a lot when we started Southeast Chapter, and we'd have people call up or email us and, you know, say, you know, how do I get involved? And we would go, this is how you get involved. We're a Big Ten organization. We are not at the point where you can go, hey, man, you know, I'd like to have you, but you need to prove yourself first. Hell no. Prove yourself in the organization doing great things. And, you know, you can just look at the activity that we've had, you know, here in Alabama or in the Southeast over the last, you know, 18 months, and you can really see that, you know, we're growing exponentially along with the national organization. Our events are getting better. They're getting more numerous, and we're now doing things to reach the entire membership of the group. So things are going well from that standpoint.
It's, man, and it's really cool to be a part of it. And I know I've said it before, but we appreciate what you guys do who are, you know, on the front lines of backcountry hunters and anglers. We really do appreciate that. So kind of going into that, there has been a recent thing that has happened in the, I don't know if you, it I don't know that did it, I don't know that it made national news. I know it did, but maybe not something that every single outdoorsman has heard of. But that was the Natural Resources Management Act. That's been a big thing that backcountry hunters and anglers has been a big part of. Probably for a long time, but just right now publicly, you know, it's really kind of coming to the surface probably in the last month. Can you talk about that and everything that entails?
Well, I can in no way talk about everything it entails. I mean,
yeah,
there's literally like 100 different conservation programs in there. I'll talk a little bit about the high points and two that specifically relate to us here in Alabama and the general South. So the first thing was the John D. Jingle, I'm sorry, John D. Dingle Conservation Management and Recreation Act, commonly known as S.47. If you were to Google search that, it'll come right up. So we as backcountry hunters and anglers were violently in support of this because of, you know, the public lands package that it entailed. There's probably, I was looking through it a couple days ago, I don't know, there's five or six different sections full of different packages for public lands, everything from creation of new wilderness to creation of ATV areas in some place. I mean, this literally has something for everybody.
I saw something about like tennis courts.
That's right. Bipartisan support. It's passed by, I think it was 98-2 in the Senate and something like 360-80 in the House. Now, I would tell you, our delegation here in Alabama, both of our senators, Senator Shelby and Senator Jones, both voted for the act. We had two senators, our two congressmen in Alabama did not. Our district representative here, Mo Brooks, did not. And I am disappointed in that. I know I've written him several times about the Land and Water Conservation Fund. Land and Water Conservation Fund was one of the major pieces of this bill. And you know, he voices support to, you know, national parks and other things, but every time he gets an opportunity to vote in support of our public lands, the vote is no. So I don't think we'll change that. I think it's an ideology position. He aligns very, very closely with Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, who is probably the most ardent anti-public land supporter.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk about that for just a second. And obviously everything is really just opinion based. There are
Absolutely.
Some, there are facts in there.
Yep.
But as a Republican from Texas,
yep.
Obviously I'm a huge Ted Cruz fan. And so what this has done for me is it has made me you know that moment where you question everything
yeah,
that you've
right.
ever believed
right.
for your whole life? That's the way it is. That's the way it is done. So public land is a huge part of my life.
Yeah.
But also, you know, things like abortion and
yep.
things like that are also, I'm very strongly opinionated on them.
Yeah.
And so what do you think, how do you tell people to kind of
How do you reconcile
that
with yourself?
Yeah.
I always tell folks, you know, you can't be a one issue voter, but this is a big issue for me, right? And it does not pass my smell test no matter what. And I'll give you what, you know, I'm an engineer by trade. I like to think that I can use logic to reason a problem
yeah.
out. So I hear your argument, and I'm saying you writ large, that maybe the states could do a better job managing, you know, our public lands. And I'm going to use our home state of Alabama as the prime example. We've got something like 2 million acres of federal lands here in the state through Bankhead National Forest or the Talladega National Forest, some others. So what would happen if we dumped all of that land on the Alabama Department of Natural Resources tomorrow to manage without giving them anything else? It would be an unmitigated disaster, right? Now, if you listen to Randy Newberg, you know that, you know, all that state lands are managed for a profit, so you have a whole lot of things that go along with that. In many cases, they were sold off over history because, you know, the states could not keep up, you know, with managing them to that profit. But I have to look at this. These are the same people that are in, are arguing to get rid of our public lands because it's an egregious federal expense. If you were to look at what the budget line item is in the federal budget for that every year, it's like $8 billion for all of Department of Interior, you know, National Wildlife Recreation, you know, pieces. $8 billion. That is nothing when you look at the overall federal budget. So
right.
to use the argument of let's get rid of all this, we get rid of all the management, we can dump all that somewhere else is a false argument because you're not really recouping anything that would substantially reduce debt. The second argument always goes to economics. Well, could we do something better with those lands and better manage? Again, I'm going to use Alabama as an example. So when you look at the Outdoor Industry Association, they have estimated that outdoor recreation in Alabama is worth $14 billion. That's a B, $14 billion in consumer spending to our state annually. Okay, 135,000 direct jobs. Let's compare that to some of the largest industries in our state. So I have a couple of little notes here, if I can read my chicken scratch.
Yeah.
The extraction industry in 2016, so that's oil, that's coal, that's all of those things, minerals that we take out of the ground, was worth, to Alabama, $2.8 billion in 2016.
Hmm.
All right, so outdoor recreation worth 7% of gross domestic product in Alabama. That's $14 billion. Extraction industry, 1.4% at 2.8. So you say, all right, Jeff, you know, all right, you got down the oil and gas industry. What about timber? And there's a couple of different things. And the forest, industry in Alabama is huge. And, you know, if you look at the largest number, it's $11.8 billion, and that was 2017. So the Outdoor Industry Association in Alabama is one of the, I think it's number four, on the largest economic engines in our state. I think the three above it are, two of them are healthcare, and the next one's finance, then the outdoor recreation economy. So if we were to get rid of all of those lands in our state, wildlife management areas, the national forests, you think about the Bass Trail in North Alabama. I mean, mm-hmm. that's an economic engine in our state. Think about the number of bass tournaments on Lake Guntersville that happen every weekend throughout the entire year, right? Bass tournaments, crappie tournaments. I mean, you pick it. So all of that factors into that $14 billion number. So if we start looking at the outdoor industry in our state as a real industry and not as a recreation activity that people take care of, I think the conversation changes. We're not going to start saying, hey, man, we need to get rid of this public land. It's going to be, hey, man, how do we create more public lands? How do we better manage our lands? How do we make more opportunities so more people come here to spend more money and make that $24 billion instead of $14?
Yeah.
That's the conversation we need to be having.
Yeah, man.
Dead on.
How do you argue with that? You can't.
Numbers don't lie.
You can't.
All right, so I'm gonna trend. I'm going to keep going for a little
let's
bit.
Let's get it good.
Yeah, just keep going, Jeff.
Let's get good, Jeff.
So the number one thing from the backcountry hunters and anglers perspective that we've been arguing on for the last, I don't know, year, was the Land and Water Conservation Fund. I mean, you saw our action alerts when it expired. I think it was September of 2018 at the end of the old Congress. We and many other of our sister organizations have been pushing Land and Water Conservation Fund reauthorization permanently, right? So what is the Land and Water Conservation Fund worth in Alabama? I would tell
you. Before you get into that, so reauthorization means that it was set. It was set and basically it's running. It ran out.
It was out in September 2018.
How long ago was it set?
In the 60s, I think.
Okay, so it was.
This is a
50 years or something
plus
like that
program.
Okay,
so we got permanent reauthorization in this public lands package that passed the House. So, again, I talked about our elected representatives. I write them often about this specifically, and I use the economic argument. In the state of Alabama, since inception, $153 million the Land and Water Conservation Fund has provided the state of Alabama. And that's gone to everything from funding some of our public lands purchases and access rights. A lot of it is gone to some of the most needy communities in our state doing parks and baseball fields and softball fields, boat ramps, other improvement, recreation improvements around the state. Those are places that, those communities would not be able to afford those projects without the Land and Water Conservation Fund. So I have always said, why are we, by any metric, Alabama is either 48, 49, or 50, depending on what you're looking at in the ranking of states, right? Why would we turn away $150 million of revenue coming in our borders? I mean, mm-hmm. that is ridiculous to me. And yet, we our congressmen were actively voting against and not participating in bills that would push that forward. So as you go through all the things the Land and Water Conservation has done here, I mean, you look at, here's a great one, hunters, Cahaba National Wildlife Refuge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lots of our friends hunt there and spend a lot of time there, and that is a major piece of importance in our state. Little River Canyon National Preservation Area, Talladega National Forest, the Wheeler National Wildlife Refuge, Bankhead National Forest. All of these things got projects out of the Land and Water Conservation Fund.
I mean,
what's not to like, right?
Yeah, that, yeah. Like, I mean, how do you
this thing is funded,
that?
You know, Land and Water Conservation Fund is funded from a piece of that offshore oil revenue that is coming in from that mineral extraction. So you're not taking from anybody, right? This is not a tax. So it's a great thing. It's a cost share program. So instead of getting, you know, a small project, you're getting twice the size of the project. In some cases, though, projects could not happen without that cost share funding. We talked a little bit about access and opportunity. So why was this bill important to us as Southern Sportsmen? The Land and Water Conservation Fund, by and large, number one. That is the number one thing for us in this package. With that funding back in place, we can now look at, Alabama. I mean, I think you guys know not all of our wildlife management areas are owned by the state. Many of them are on either short or long-term leases. I think we've lost something like 60,000 acres of wildlife management area over the last 4 or 5 years. I understand there may be another 50,000 acres on the chopping block here pretty soon.
Isn't a lot of that coming off of Cahaba?
I think so. I think some of it is. So there are some things that the Land and Water Conservation Fund, in its now reauthorized form, will be able to help us with from both an access and opportunity point. So
talking about those, sorry, I'm going to interrupt you a little bit. Talking about those, kind of, I guess, for lack of a better word, leased public lands. How exactly, and you may have said this and I just missed it, how exactly does it help maintain some of those leased? Obviously, it helps it maintain it while it is while it is run by the state. But how does it protect it, I guess is the better word.
Well, so the ultimate in protection for us is to be able to do a purchase and then that thing come into the state as a permanent piece of wildlife management area. So, you know, our Forever Wild program is a big function of that. So when you look at using Forever Wild dollars and or other state funds, you get the matching fund from the Land and Water Conservation Fund, maybe that gets you to one of those projects that you wouldn't other be able to get. But then there's, you know, the miscellaneous projects, the gun ranges and things like that.
Sure.
Those are all Land and Water Conservation Fund, you know, available to be co-funded through that program.
Now, I've noticed on Little River Canyon, the last 3 years, they've just completely stopped planting greenfields on the, the south side of the Highway 35 going up on the right side. And I don't know if Forever Wild bought some of that land or... But they've just completely stopped planting greenfields.
Yeah, so I think if you talk to our Natural Resources Agency, you know, where they get all of that money from for the active management piece is through license sales. And as those continue to dip, their operating funds go down, and we have less amenities as hunters. So if you love the outdoors, you know, there are lots of people. I'm gonna take bird watchers, for instance. You know, Alabama birding trails all up and down the state. It is a big, big, big recreation opportunity here. You can go onto our wildlife management areas and look at birds through your binoculars all day, and it costs you zero, right? I would encourage those folks to buy a hunting license or a fishing license or a duck stamp, a state duck stamp. Those dollars go right into supporting the management of those areas for all of us, not just one group of folks.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, so when you're talking about, you know, these leased properties, kind of going back to that a little bit, but also tying that in with things like hunting licenses. Every dollar is important.
Yep.
Every dollar counts. You know, when you're complaining about, oh, our license sales went up, however much money.
Yeah.
I hunt a place where, I don't want to give too much information away, but there are places and boat ramps and things where you have to pay a certain amount of money to get into each place. Is that directly, so when I'm paying into that, is that directly going into that?
Operations and maintenance, yeah.
Okay, and so how does that connect to things like Land and Water Conservation Fund?
So the Land and Water Conservation Fund would have funded the project itself.
Okay.
And then the upkeep comes out of that.
Comes out of
maintenance
of the other stuff. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you're an outdoorsman and you hunt public land and you've paid money, chances are this is tied to your dollars that you're spending.
You know, it's our public land hunting club, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's really what it is, right? Your taxes go into this. Your license sales go into this. It's your resource. And our state agencies are depending on us to help them management through our purchase of a license. And you know, and look, you know, even if you're not a duck hunter, purchasing that state duck stamp helps management of those areas across all boundaries. So, right. I just started waterfowl hunting a few years ago, or say 2 years ago, but you know, I started before that buying those waterfowl stamps specifically to support those conservation efforts. And it's, you know, it's $20. I mean, not killing the wallet either, right?
Is it 20 for one duck, or is it 20 for each duck?
If you're hunting with me, you might be 20 for no ducks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Tyler's not we're not waterfowlers.
No, I've never.
As much as we'd like to be.
The other thing I want to talk about, you know, the other big piece of this sportsman's package that's relatable to us here as Southern sportsmen is the permanent access to federal lands. So, you know, we hear about limit, you know, maybe the way to get to a sale or a transfer of public lands to the states is to just limit access to them. And then, you know, you can open up mining rights or turn it over to the state or do whatever, because nobody would use it at that point. You can prove that, you know, it's an economic drain, whatever. It all comes back to the dollars and cents, right?
Yeah.
So the access our federal lands piece basically says those federal lands permanently open to hunting, fishing, and other recreation activities. If the federal government wants to take them out for some reason, they have to publicize it and a valid reason to do that. So it could be, you know, they were going to do some gas leasing rights on a spot of BLM land. You know, they would box that out as no interest. That's cool, and we all accept that. But what this does is says hunting, shooting, fishing on your federal lands, all good to go.
Okay. Wow. So
now why does that matter here in North Alabama? Tennessee Valley Authority land, all the way up and down the Tennessee River, the Army Corps of Engineers land, up and down the Tennessee River, and in a national forest system. Those three things are directly affected by that.
So, you know, I mean, you're looking at this, you know, and I think it's intimidating for the average guy to look at everything that's included in all of this.
It absolutely is.
You know, it's intimidating, but I think it's good to break down a lot of this stuff. So we talked about the land and water conservation. We talked about the unlimited access. What are some other things in there that?
So there were several things in there related to creation of new wilderness area. Some in California, there was a specific act for protecting some of the desert in California. So if you follow lots of the OTV, the off-road vehicle guys, you know, they do a lot of dune riding. It's very popular. So this was not a deal where we said, hey, cutting it out, no more of that. But rather they set aside, you know, a spot specifically for it. You know, and then we're not talking about, you know, just a little spot, go ride in your little football field area. But there were some ecologically sensitive areas that were able to be protected. And then that bipartisan deal, you know, trade back and forth, to then have a whole lot opened up for the off-road vehicles. And that happened in several places. There were off-road vehicle recreation areas set aside. That's a big thing. I mean, hunters, wilderness protection folks, supporting, you know, like early on, backcountry hunters and anglers had the bad tag of, hey man, you guys hate people on four-wheelers. No, we don't hate people on four-wheelers. We don't like people riding their stuff into the wilderness where they're not supposed to be.
Right.
What about like an e-bike?
So, wilderness area, no wheeled access. You want to ride an e-bike, ride it everywhere you can.
So you can ride an e-bike, not the...
Yeah.
E-bike on like the WMA.
Yep.
That's all it's legal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you just can't take it on a wilderness area, right?
Tyler uses podcasts to find, he's like taking notes for his own hunting.
Yeah. See, so, you know, Skyline, you can ride a full-wheeler. There are certain parts you can ride a full-wheeler on, but if you kill something, you can retrieve it with ATV.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that just do, you know, bicycle, mountain bike-style hunting. That's where the e-bikes kind of grew out of for hunting there. I'm one of them.
I'm fixing to be.
When I started, I bought a mountain bike specifically for hunting on public lands, and I built a little blind to go with it because, you know, you set your turkey chair up, put your bike up, drape your camo net over the side of that, and all of a sudden, you know, you're set up. Do some internet searching on it, man. You see guys has got these trailers hooked to their bikes and they're carrying around. I mean, you can get crazy with that thing.
There's a following.
To. Yeah.
It's a niche. It's turning into a
niche.
It
is. It's a big niche.
So talking about, you know, that you're talking about it in California as far as like adding wilderness areas and things like that. So is this thing where, you know, if I'm looking at it that perspective, obviously that's great.
Yeah.
Like That's great for the people of California. It's good to be a part of that. As Americans, obviously, that's awesome. Does this open it up for that same type of stuff to happen across the United States?
So I don't think you're going to see a lot of new wilderness in the eastern and southern United States. I mean, our population and geography just doesn't really support it. I think we're generally okay with that. I mean, we've got some wilderness areas in our area, and quite frankly, we've got some very large sections of national forest that the interior sections might as well be wilderness, because there ain't many people accessing those things, right? I think what we would look for, and there's some as you get into the fine text of the bill, there are some forest management items in there that you know, cost share, a little more active forest management on both public and private sections, which is good. They're good, right, for us. I mean, you know, Alabama, look at a state like us that's, you know, primarily private land. Active forest management on the private land, you know, keeps the wildlife population high. We would like to see some of that. Good. I talked about this on TVA land a lot. You know, you have access is not great, but it's there. Opportunity maybe not necessarily be great because it's not actively managed. You know, it's old growth forest now. There's not a lot of underbrush. So if you've got the turkey I chased all last year was on a new piece of pines that had recently burned. That guy was not leaving that new piece of pines to walk 100 feet onto the public land into an old growth forest with no underbrush. Just not going to happen, right?
Right.
So, you know, an end piece example, but it's an example of what's going on. One of the reasons why I'm completely against, I don't care for supplemental feeding during hunting season is, you know, I think it reduces some of the opportunity we have on our public lands. Because, you know, you're drawing animals out on a bad year, especially, mm-hmm. have a bad mass crop, out of those public access areas onto, you know, a private land area where they may be feeding a significant amount of supplemental feed.
Right.
That, you know, that's my opinion. I know.
No, yeah.
I agree with that.
I totally agree with you. I don't disagree. I think a lot of people who listen would also agree with that. You know, when you talk about supplemental feeding, which we're not really in this episode, but it's a good conversation.
Yeah.
To have, you know, obviously, again, you're talking to a kid who's raised in Texas.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's just how you hunt. That's just what you do. It don't matter. I mean, there's not a whole lot of people.
South Mississippi, like where I grew up. I mean, when I grew up down there, the deer population was almost nil. Now we've got a pretty good population, but you know, on the coastal plain, I mean, there's not many seasons like you know, West Texas.
Yep.
I mean, if you're not doing some of that, you know, you may go a whole season without seeing one of those.
Exactly.
Deer.
You know, there was a year specifically where I tried hunting some spots that didn't have a feeder or mm-hmm. anything, and it just didn't work out.
You do a lot of surfing on your phone.
Yeah. And but you know, when you put that reasoning behind it, the greater good of some areas to preserve a hunting heritage or an outdoor lifestyle, you know, something like TVA land or something like that that's not actively managed. Man, like I want my children to be able to enjoy what I get to enjoy right now. And things like this, like all the stuff we've talked about, that it seems like it's working towards being able to preserve it for the future of the sport, not just the here and now. You know, and things like supplemental feeding where it's not legal is something, you know, to really consider in that, like, that is for the here and now.
Yeah.
You're saying, I want to put a corn pile out so next week I can come out and kill an animal.
One of the things is, you know, we talk about access and opportunity a lot. So Forever Wild program, I love it. It's a great program here in Alabama. But, you know, we're facing the era where the super large wildlife management area is over, mm-hmm. right? As those big 60,000 acre, 5,000 acre blocks that are lead away, you're not going to see those again. You've seen some of that with these creation of the special opportunity area hunts, which I'm a big fan of. You know, smaller blocks, really well managed. You're getting some really good opportunities on those hunts.
Sure.
You're going to see more of those around the state coming up, and the Forever Wild program will be a big part of that. Georgia is doing somewhat similar program through the Georgia Outdoor Stewardship Act, which we were largely in support of and played a big part in education on there last year, where they're taking a percentage of a tax and pulling in the GOSA fund, and then exactly that. They're going to create more public access areas and opportunities throughout the state. So we're seeing folks kind of mimic some of the great things we have here in Alabama and even take it up a notch. Seeing that outdoor industry association number and treating our outdoor industry as an industry and an economic engine, I think you'll start seeing more states in our laydown do more of that.
That's incredible. So what are some other things? And we're kind of running a little bit low on time. We've been talking for a little bit. But before we get off of this, is there anything else part of this like is beneficial to break down in this episode?
I think I covered the main point. Most important thing to us, Land and Water Conservation Fund, and then the permanent access for usage on the federal lands. To us as Southern sportsmen, those are the two big things. We'll see hopefully we'll see some more active forest management out of the forest management pieces of that. I encourage everybody to pull that thing up and just browse the topics, mm-hmm. and you can see through the first four pages what interests you, and then jump right into it.
That's what I did, and actually I was a little bit intimidated coming in and talking to you about it, just because, you know, the things that you talked about are the things that really stuck out to me, and I probably could have talked about those to somebody else, you know, on my own. But looking through that, it's like I'm missing something. Something else is in here.
I am not an attorney, and I don't interpret a lot of legalese. I go with the layman's, you know, explanation. And my always try to phrase things like this: if this was easy, what would it look like, right? And that's kind of how I have to read those and try to spit it back out.
That's awesome, man. Well, we really do appreciate you breaking that down. Say if somebody's listening to this, which there's bound to be somebody who's listening to this that's like inspired by it. What would you say should be their next step to get involved in something like this?
So, you know, if you're really passionate about our public lands, or you want to get involved in hunting, or you want to get involved in fishing, the best thing you can do right now is go to backcountryhunters.org and find your local chapter. I'm not even asking you to join at this point, though the cost of entry is cheap. It's about $25 for a yearly membership. Most of us can find that laying around. Reach out to your local chapter, and what you're going to find is a couple things. You're going to find, one, a group of people that you relate to on day one, okay? The second thing you're going to find is a section of folks right there. If you want to learn how to hunt, or you want to learn how to do something else, they're going to have a recruitment, retention, and reactivation coordinator whose sole purpose is to be there to help you. And they'll have programs. I mean, our chapters have butchering workshops and cooking workshops, all kinds of things, right? And they grow every year. If you're a college student listening to this, involved, we are actually working college clubs at most campuses. Happy to guide you in that direction too. And you can always reach out and contact me. Parker will put my info in the show notes.
Absolutely.
That you can do that. From a special project standpoint, we're looking at really increasing our outreach program to our currently serving military and veteran community here across, but not just in the Southeast, but nationwide. That's one of my focus areas on the North American board. So you'll start seeing more info on that program as we near the national rendezvous time in 2019. The best thing you can do, if you don't hold a hunting or fishing license right now, go to your local Walmart, tell them you want a hunting or fishing license, and pay that really inexpensive fee in most cases.
It is very inexpensive.
Get the duck stamp.
Yeah, get that duck stamp.
Yeah, duck
you can stamp kill
there.
At least one duck.
For $20.
Hey,
right?
Listen, when you buy your hunting license, you're going to get the opportunity to check a box and say, hey, yeah, for $5 extra a year, I think, send me the monthly Alabama Outdoors or Kentucky Outdoors or Mississippi Outdoors magazine. Check that box and start reading that quarterly publication or bi-publication. And it will really amaze you some of the things that are available to your state that you may not know about.
That's incredible. I don't know what else you could say really that would be more inspirational to somebody to joining Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, becoming a part, get involved, find your chapter. You know, it was kind of funny. It took me a while to really decide to go ahead and do this thing and get involved. And, man, I wish I would have done it so much earlier, because I've developed a lot of great friends through
BHA. It's a great group, lots of great energy. You know, look, and if I can plug the most recent thing we're doing right now. So turkey season opens here in Alabama on March 16th. I think it opened in Florida on March the 2nd. Yeah. So we're running it's not really a competition or a raffle, but we're running a program over the course of turkey season, our laydown. So it goes from March 2nd all the way through, I think, March 15th is the end of turkey season in the entire seven-state southeast region. I think so. Not in Alabama.
Right.
But overall, May 15th, I think, is the last day. We're calling it Gobblers and Garbage. So I told about me being a bad turkey hunter. So mostly I walk around and pick up trash and put my vest and carry it out. So what we're doing is we want to do an event that captured the entire membership of the Southeast chapter. So can you participate in this no matter where you're at? And the answer is yes. So when you're out turkey hunting on our public lands this year, take some plastic grocery bags that you get from the Quick Stop or Republic's or your local shopping center. Take those with you in your bag. So if you're an advanced turkey hunter, you can mash that bag a little bit and it'll crackle and it'll sound like a turkey scratching. So some folks use that as a call. So when you're done and you haven't killed a turkey and you're walking out because you scared them with your plastic bag, take that bag and fill it up with some trash that you pick up on the way out. If you hunt TVA land, I guarantee you, you're going to find some trash.
You might find a mattress.
Yeah.
Or a body.
And so in most places, you're going to find a fair amount of trash at the parking area or somewhere else. So fill up a couple of bags. And what we're saying is those bags equal 8 points. Send us a picture of those bags from the field and just tell us, you know, where you were at in general. We don't want your GPS point, right? You can tag us on social media at hashtag Gobblers and Garbage, or you can email it to us at our email address, and we're going to run a weekly leaderboard with that thing. Now, what if you go out and kill a bird on our public land? Well, we're going to take your bags of trash, you've got to have one bag of trash to enter, times the length of your turkey beard to get your number of points. And we'll, at the end of the year, you're going to have multiple leaderboard entries. We'll total up all those points. Grand prize is a 75-quart Yeti cooler. We'll do a prize for each state. That prize will be, I think it's a BHA hat or t-shirt, your choice. Or I think so, yeah. And then we'll do a largest bird competition, which will be beard length, and that'll be a $30 gift card to Hunt to Eat.
So for a guy like me who shoots a lot of jakes.
Yep. Pick up a lot of trash.
Just pick up a lot of trash.
And hey, this counts as scouting too, right? So I know some states start later. If you're out scouting this weekend or next weekend, collect some of that trash up while you're out, enter yourself in the leaderboard.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool. I was actually going to get you to talk about that
I had to tell you, I'm really excited about this. I think it's something that we can get lots of participation on.
Yeah.
And there's a low barrier to entry.
Yeah. I mean, and a pretty good prize.
I think so. Yeti 75-quart cooler, that's no joke,
that's
right?
Pretty cool. So it counts for every turkey you kill, right? Like
So if I go hunting and I kill one, say 7-inch beard, pick up one bag of trash, I get 7 points for that trip. The next time I go, I kill one 5-inch beard, but I get 2 bags of trash, I got 10 points. So I got trip number 1 at 7, trip 2 at 10. We'll total you up at the end of the year
off
all that, and we'll come up with our grand prize.
That's awesome.
I can tell you,
I have to get a lot of trash to win.
I will not kill two birds. Hey, now listen to your point. If you show up and you see that washing machine parked on the side of your WMA, just put your trash bag on the corner of that and take a picture of it, and we'll count it.
Okay,
that's awesome.
That'll work.
We need to go by weight.
We wanted to use a simple unit of measure that everybody.
That's awesome.
Have, you know?
That's cool, man. Well, Jeff, man, we really do appreciate you coming on the show. As he said, get involved. However it is that you want to get involved, buy a license, support BHA, become a member, go to a pint night, go to any kind of backcountry hunters and anglers. I promise, if you're listening to this, there is a chapter somewhere close to you. So check it out.
Yeah, just opened our first, or our most recent chapter is Iowa. Officially recognized yesterday.
I saw that. That's really cool. And actually, I was going to send Dan Johnson. Do you know Dan? He is the one who owns the Sports Foundation,
okay,
which is what we are a part of. And he runs the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. And he just had Lantani on his show that came out like last week,
yeah,
talking about BHA. And I was like, man, this is going to be really cool. There's not a whole lot of podcasts on the network that talk about BHA.
Yeah.
And then he did that, and I had this interview scheduled with you. I was like, we're just going to be a BHA network.
Hey, you know what? Land's a great guest. And, you know, if you really want to talk in depth about public lands issues, he is the guy
That's
to talk
cool.
to. He
That's
is
cool.
He is a passionate and great advocate for our cause.
Well, man, we feel the same way about you, so... Really appreciate
it. Hey, man, really, I really appreciate it. It's been a good hour spent.
That's been great, man. Well, cool. Jeff, before you go, what is a way that people can get in contact with you?
Use my email. It's Jeffrey, JeffreyJones, JONES04@gmail.com. I will get that 24/7 no matter where I'm at in the world.
Cool. Awesome, man. Well, thanks for coming on.
All right. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks so much to Jeff for coming on the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. We really appreciate it. Man, what a awesome episode. So much good conversation there about our public lands. And if you're anything like me, I knew a lot of the highlights of the Natural Resources Management Act, but I didn't know in full detail everything. And so Jeff absolutely broke that down in a way that I could understand it. Hopefully you guys can understand it as well. So, man, we just really appreciate Jeff coming on the show. I know this is not going to be the last time that you get to hear from him. And so, man, I'm just super stoked at the way that that conversation turned out. I hope you guys got a lot out of it. Hope you enjoy the show, this show, other shows, future shows. I am just super excited about where we are as a podcast with Southern Ground. We couldn't do what we do without the companies that support us. First off, without the people that support us, like you. Second, the companies that support us, like Onyx, like New Breed, like Tethered, and like Go Wild. We couldn't do what we do if it weren't for them. And so, huge shout out to them. As I said in the beginning, we're going to be announcing very soon a giveaway that we're going to do with Tethered, and I think you're going to want what we're giving away because it's really cool. Even if you already have what we're giving away, I think you're still going to want it because it's going to be even cooler than the one that you already have. So I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it is going to be cool. It's going to be really freaking cool. So yeah, check out the YouTube channel if you have not done that. We're putting a lot of content out. I made it a goal this year to put out a video every single week. And so far, it's been going pretty good. Currently, I didn't mention this at the beginning, but I'm currently sitting in a condo in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, because me and my wife are on our baby moon, which, by the way, I don't think I've even said anything about that on the podcast. My wife is pregnant, and it's my baby, which is really cool. This is our second baby, and so right now we're on our baby moon, so I don't know that I'll be doing any video editing or anything like that, but I did just release a video of the hog that I smoked last week, and hopefully you guys have watched it. If you haven't watched it, go check it out. Maybe there's some other videos on the channel. That is the Sportsman's Nation channel on YouTube. Lots of cool content there. As always, guys, check us out on Instagram and on Facebook. That's at Southern Ground Hunting. And like our stuff, share the stuff. Even if you don't like it, share it. It helps us out. We really appreciate that. Give us a thumbs up. Not a thumbs up. I'm so used to stinking YouTube videos right now. Give us a 5-star review on Apple, on iTunes. Give us a 5-star review if you like the show. Even, again, if you didn't like it, give us a 5-star review because that really helps us out and it builds our confidence, and confidence is everything. All right, that's it. I'm a little bit tired. I'm full. I ate it at fish tacos today, and so I'm like super full right now. But as always, guys, God gave us dominion over the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and the beasts of the earth. So make sure you go out and exercise that dominion. I will talk to you next time.